So the next step for me is then tying it to, it's having a list of 15, you know, ideas that you've got, but then tying it to your launches.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am joined by the awesome Janet Murray. Janet's a marketeer and a former journalist, and she's launched a new product into the market, and we cover everything to do with content strategy. So strap yourself in. This is a great one, and show notes can be found at peteeverett.com/032. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. And today I am honoured to be joined by the very lovely Janet Murray. Janet, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, thank you for being here. Now, if you don't know who Janet is, I suggest you go and check out janetmurray.com. And I'll also ask where you've been in this planet. But anyway, so Janet, do you want to give a sort of quick intro as to who you are and what you do?
Yes. So how I generally describe myself these days is I say that I help small business owners to get better at marketing so they can make more money. And specifically, I help them with content, so content marketing. But my background is actually journalism. So I spent 18 years writing and editing for national newspapers like The Guardian in the UK. And my business story really is that when I was working as a journalist, I noticed something quite early on. And what I noticed is that most people who worked in PR and in marketing as well were dreadful at pitching to the press. So I'd get these awful press releases. I'd get these like dreadful emails from people. I think, God, why would anyone want to cover that? So I was working sort of freelance, but I was mainly working for The Guardian. And I kind of thought, well, if these people don't know how to pitch things, then maybe I can teach them how to do it. So I started like running these pitching workshops. They started off as small workshops, and I started to run these like bigger events in London, and I started to get offered consultancy work to go and consult with big companies and go and deliver pitching training and content training and that kind of thing. And then I kind of thought to myself, oh, how can I get more of this like juicy consultancy training work? And I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll start a blog, because if I start a blog and I start, you know, answering people's questions on a blog, then people will find me online and they'll all want to work with me and it'll be brilliant. But what I discovered when I started blogging is that it's not enough just to have a blog. You have to actually get people to read it. So I started to learn about content marketing, and I started to learn like how to actually get traffic to your website and how to, you know, then I started creating like email opt-ins to get people to opt into my email list and growing my list, and I became a bit obsessive about traffic and subscribers and you know where you place the opt-in on the page, and so I got really kind of geeky about all of this. And then I started to teach, and I started to get to the point where I got a bit bored with journalism, and I'd sort of been like doing the same thing for years and years. I thought, actually, I'd really like kind of like to do this full time, because it's quite fun doing this content marketing thing and finding clients online, or them finding me, because it's like inbound marketing. So I started to sort of pivot a little bit, and I started to run online courses for small business owners, actually, to help them to promote themselves. And initially, I specialised in helping them to get press coverage, because that was quite a niche and it was something that people really wanted to know about. So just to try and summarise all the things I've done in the last 5 years, so I obviously had this blog. So I started a podcast, which used to be called the Soulful PR Podcast, and now it's just the Janet Murray Show. Then I started running live events as well. I was doing sort of small events, but also kind of big conferencey style events. I also started to do sort of more consultancy, started running masterminds group. I started a membership community, and I started off actually really focusing on helping people with press and PR. But what I found, and I think this is kind of really relevant, and it's kind of why I've really pivoted in my business in terms of how I'm working with people, is that I mean, I feel that although press and PR is still really important, I think it's only kind of part of the puzzle. And what was happening is that I was getting clients coming to me, and they were like, can you help me get into Vogue, or can you help me to get in The Guardian or in BBC? And I was like, yeah, I can help you do that. But actually, you know, what's going to happen, you know, if people read something about you in the BBC or they read something in The Guardian and they come to your website and then there isn't anything to keep them there? And, you know, if you're not doing email marketing, if you're not active on social media, then actually the impact of that press coverage you get is actually going to be quite minimal. So I started to teach people about press and PR more within a kind of content marketing umbrella. So, you know, I think there's four things you need to be doing to promote your business every day. So I think content marketing is one, email marketing, social media marketing, and then press for me is like the cherry on the cake, the bit that you do when you've got everything else working. Because if you're, you know, if you get some coverage in the press and then people read about that, they go to your website and they read some fantastic content, they're going to stick around, they're going to sign up to your email list. So I started to sort of teach it like that. And before I knew it, I found that I was kind of more teaching content marketing with a bit of press as part of it as well. And that sort of takes me up to today. So how I work with people now is I've got a big membership community. It's called the Love Marketing Membership. I've got about 400 members in there, and we kind of work together, like, you know, all year round to help them learn how to get better at marketing their business so they can make more money. I do have some marketing people and PR people in there as well, but I've got product and service-based businesses. I've also got a mastermind group for people who are a little bit more further on and looking for more sort of personalized one-to-one guidance. I run live events, a couple of live events a year. I also still got the book, so I've still got the press book. We were just saying, need to write another book, which is more focused on content. I've also got, again, this kind of came from my press days, but I've got a media diary. So this time of year, I bring out a media diary. It's an A4 desk diary that you can use to plan out your content for the coming year. It's got awareness days, key dates you can use. And from that came another membership, the Media Diary Owners Club. So that's to help people who, you know, are good at creating content plans, but not so good at sticking at them, to help people with that accountability. And again, that comes from my journalism days, because as a journalist, you very much work to a diary. So you very much work to, you don't publish anything without saying to yourself, like, why do people need to hear about this now? Or why do people need to hear about it next week or whatever? Yeah. And so that's kind of like my very long-winded way of saying that these days, I when I think about what I do now, I'm helping people to kind of build audiences online, because if you've got an audience, you can sell people more stuff, whatever it is that you sell, products or services. But actually, for me, the way that you build an audience is you build an audience by being the best content creator in your space. That's how you stand out. And if you're really focused on doing that, like I was with my blog all those years ago, I was focused in creating the best content at that time on press and PR, then you'll naturally learn all of the things, you know, like getting traffic and getting more, you know, getting people to sign up to your email list and all that kind of stuff. So does that kind of give you an idea? I've kind of given you like my whole CV in about 2 minutes. Does it give you an idea?
I think you missed what you had for breakfast this morning, but we can shoot over that. That's fine. No, you do raise some very good points there, though, which is, you know, the I guess you know, when you're looking at it from a PR point of view and you're talking about really getting bang for your buck out of your PR, your PR exposure. The thing is, with the way that content or marketing has gone towards content marketing now, is that you can't, there's a lot less of this kind of trying to inflate your ego. You know, for some businesses, featuring in Vogue or the Guardian or whatever, used to be kind of their sort of their goal. Oh, well, this year we'll get in the Guardian, for example. But actually, if you've now not got the online presence to back that up, then it's kind of a meaningless kind of task.
Yeah. And I think also, I mean, I often say to my clients, like, you don't have to wait to be picked these days. Like, you don't have to wait for The Guardian to pick you or BBC to pick you or Cosmopolitan to pick you. Like, you can be out there creating your own media. And what I think is really interesting, what's changed about the landscape now, is that journalists will be, if you're out there and you're committed to creating really fantastic, remarkable, top-notch content, they will find you. So when I was speaking at a conference last week over in Milan, and I was giving examples about how of businesses that had got incredible media coverage, not because they'd tried, but just because they're out there creating really remarkable, interesting content. So one example I often give is a lady who hosts the Bride Chiller podcast, Alicia McCormack. Mm-hmm. She's been featured in some fantastic places. It's like an alternative wedding podcast for people who don't like wedding fairs and things like that. she's had like some fantastic coverage in places like Vogue and the New York Post and in the Guardian, but she hasn't pitched anybody or written a press release. Like, basically, journalists are Googling or they're on Twitter and they're looking for, you know, somebody who's got interesting things to say about weddings and wedding planning, and they find her because she's out there creating fantastic content. So I feel like things have almost shifted around, and instead of us kind of like pursuing the press and desperate to get in the Guardian or BBC, but if we're just out there like committed to creating really, really fantastic content that really helps the people that we want to reach, then journalists will find us and they'll want to feature us. I think that, you know, that's a big turnaround, I think.
Now, there is something there that I would just like to sort of, a little tangent, I suppose. One of the things that a number of our clients through our agency sort of don't necessarily get is Twitter. Yet Twitter is kind of the journalist's sort of unwritten black book somehow, isn't it? I mean, journalists absolutely love Twitter, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a search engine for journalists. So myself, you know, worked writing stories for The Guardian for like 18 years. If I got a commission to write something, the first thing I do is go on Twitter and I would have a look. So, and I gave some examples in this talk I was doing in Milan last week. I gave some examples there. So I've got a client called Melanie Haynes, and she has a relocation consultancy over in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And she got a slot, a half hour slot on BBC Radio Scotland because a journalist was just on Twitter looking for somebody to interview. They found her Twitter account, saw that she was sharing all this useful content about Copenhagen, saw that she had her own blog and was creating her own content, and they just rang her up and said, do you want to do this show? And they flew over to Copenhagen, did half an hour with her on BBC Scotland, and that was all she did. And I had another client who's, they make like kind of pashminas or something, and she just got a call from a journalist from The Guardian out of the blue because they'd been searching on Twitter and they were looking for somebody who could talk about developments in the cotton industry, which is quite niche. But they'd found Rachel because Rachel was on Twitter and she was sharing things about cotton, and she was sharing things, you know. So I think people often forget that if you're, that's where journalists are hanging out, you know, that they're actively looking for people, they're using hashtags. And when you're a journalist, you have to work so quickly. So somebody will say, you've got to find somebody to talk to on this, and you've got to do it in the next half an hour. So if you're not on Twitter, then you're missing a trick. But B, if you've not thought about your profile and you've not thought about the kind of content that you're sharing, then a journalist may well stumble across you and think, well, they sound interesting. But if your bio is confusing, or if you haven't tweeted for 2 weeks, or if you're tweeting sort of bizarre stuff about what you have for breakfast or whatever. So I think it can be a great tool, but just a little bit of common sense in terms of just thinking about how journalists are searching, what they might be searching for.
It's a bit like speed dating on steroids then. That's kind of what you're telling me.
Yeah, and also there's this fab hashtag called Journo Request, which I don't know if you know about it. So yeah, it's Journo Request, and basically journalists go on there every day. I've just got an email from a journalist today, actually, for somebody who's writing something about diaries and planners, which is perfect for me, and someone passed it on to me. And a journalist, I think it's from The Independent, just posted something up using this hashtag. And, journalists were looking for help with stories, looking for people who can help. It's the perfect, yeah, like you say, it's like speed dating. It's the perfect marriage kind of thing.
So the really weird thing is that I've just come off a recording earlier today where we were talking about don't try to get married too soon. and now I'm having exactly the opposite conversation.
Like, yeah. Just skip all the politeness and the pleasantries. But I think that's the thing for me about getting press is that, I mean, what started this whole journey that I've been on now is just my frustration as a journalist, because people were trying to so many things I didn't want. It was like, I'm an education and I specialise in education and politics, so I don't want your press release about your new buggy that you've just created, because I'm not going to do anything on that. And for me, getting press, that's always what it's all been about. It's about listening. It's about, you know, if you want to be featured in particular publications, get on Twitter, find the journalists who work on the publications you want to be featured in, make a secret Twitter list of them, follow them, see what they're talking about, see what they're interested in, get to know them, and then you can turn up. And, you know, it's a bit like, you know, sorry to begin another dating analogy, but, you know, like trying to impress somebody, you know, you fancy, and if they say they like rugby, you say you like rugby too, or, you know, it's that kind of thing. And I think a lot of it's just about common sense and good communications. And I think people try very hard when it comes to getting PR and press, and actually a lot of it is just about listening and understanding and just trying to give the journalists what they want and need. And it becomes really easy if you just think about it like that.
Brilliant. No, that's fantastic. And of course, we now have sorted out the title for this podcast, which is Dating with Janet Murray.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's based. Are you based in Manchester? Did you?
No, we're based in Sheffield.
I thought. I don't know why I thought you're based in Manchester, but I've got a friend who says, yeah, I should have my own podcast, which is about all my previous dating disasters and old boyfriends. So he would find it very amusing if it was a podcast episode that was called Dating with Janet Murray. He'd love it.
I'll do you a spoof piece of artwork so you can send it to me.
Yeah,
here we go. Here we go. We've done it. Thank you for covering that. And as I say, that was a little bit of a tangent, but it's I think it's worth just covering some of those things sometimes. Obviously, as we've discussed, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are either marketing consultants, or some of them are even business owners that haven't yet, I suppose, got the budgets to sort of employ people to do marketing. So they're worrying about delivering their own content. And generating regular content seems to be quite a sort of big undertaking anyway, let alone when you then have to start worrying about, are people engaging with it? Do I repurpose it onto different platforms, et cetera, et cetera. So what's kind of your sort of take on it? Where's the best place to start when you're thinking about putting together a content plan?
Okay, so I have a fantastic four-step process that I use myself, and I teach my clients to use. It's really easy. I can share it with you now.
Oh, if you don't mind, that'd be great.
And it comes with the disclaimer that I am naturally a disorganized person, having spent so many years working in journalism, do everything on the last minute because you have to. And, you know, so I've had to learn how to be organized. So the very first thing that I would suggest that you do to create a content plan is actually sit down. And in my media diary that I've created, I've got like pro formas that you can use for this, but it's just to create like a quarterly plan. So basically, it's actually an annual plan, but you divide your page, you get an A4 page, put it horizontal and divide it into four parts. So the first part's quarter one, second quarter two, quarter three and quarter four. And then the very first thing I would do is just sit down, okay, right, what's happening in my business? Or if you're doing this on behalf of the client, what's happening in my client's business? So quarter one, three or four key things that are happening in your business. So for me, for example, I have a membership community and it's open to new members between Christmas and New Year, so I know I need to put that on quarter one. I'm launching an online program on how to build an audience in February, so that would go on there. I'm speaking at an event in March, it might go on there as well. If I'm thinking about quarter four next year, well, I have this media diary that I bring out, and we usually launch that sort of back end of quarter three, beginning of quarter four. I run a live event, a content planning event in quarter four. This year I was on a panel at Upreneur Summit, speaking there, spoke at the event the year before. So it's just thinking about what are the key things that are happening in your business and the key things that you're going to be launching and selling. And again, if you're doing this on behalf of your clients, then just thinking about what are the key things they're going to be launching and selling. So it's really interesting. I run a live event called Content Live, which is a content planning masterclass. And I did this exercise live in the class with the delegates. And some of them put their hands up and said, well, we can't do this exercise. I said, why can't you do this exercise? Because I don't know what's going to be happening in my business in November. And I'm like, right, okay, so what's the problem there? They're like, oh, okay, so the problem is if I don't know what's happening in my business, I don't have a content problem. I've actually got a business problem. And that is actually when people are struggling to come up with a content plan, that's usually it, because they don't know what they're going to be doing. And so I'd always say start with, you know, three or four key things each quarter, and you can start to build content around that. So for example, I'm launching this online program on how to build an audience in February. So I know that in January time, I need to be putting out some podcast episodes and blog posts that are kind of on that topic to get people interested in it and to start to create some buzz around it. And when you think about it like that and just keep it really simple, like three or four things, becomes really easy. I've got this media diary that's got awareness days and key dates. So you can, you know, pull out some fun dates like Valentine's Day, it's another dating analogy, Valentine's Day, you know, St. Patrick's Day, you know, things like, I mean, it's amazing actually, some of my clients, the things that you would think are sort of silly days. Like one of my clients has National Hedgehog Day. You would think that was a silly day, wouldn't you? But actually she's a parenting blogger, and so she was able to create this lovely post around her favorite hedgehog books, which actually for her audience was perfect. So you know, the other thing you can do is, you know, for each quarter, just pick out, you can find these online, you know, as well. You don't have to have a media diary, but you can find them online, and just find some key dates and awareness days. Or, you know, if you've got a sports business, Wimbledon, rugby tournaments, you know, it's just about sort of using your common sense. And this comes naturally to me because of my background in press, because we're always thinking about what's coming up, what are people going to be talking about, what's going to be topical, Brexit, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's the first step, and that literally should take you 5 or 7 minutes. I've got a video tutorial that goes with my content planning masterclass, and it literally is 7 minutes long to do this particular activity. So the next step once you've done that is a quarterly plan. And for this, I just think when it comes to like content marketing, why do we do content marketing? Well, we want to make more sales. You know, we want to sell more of our products or services. And so for me, it's just sitting down and thinking, what are the key questions that my customers ask me all the time? And so that's going to be a mixture of questions that they ask you, like quite generic questions, and then some questions which are more specific to your product or service. So just to take my media diary as an example, so, you know, a generic question that people ask me is like, how do I put together a content plan? Like, how do I stick to a content plan? You know, how many how many months ahead should I plan my content? I'm trying to think of other questions people ask about content planning. Do I need to have a content strategy? Do I need to post every day on social media? So they're sort of like quite generic questions. Yeah. And then more specific ones would be like, I don't know, what 6 reasons to buy the 2019 media diary, or I have the media diary, and I also have this thing called the Media Diary Owners Club, and people ask me what's the difference between the two. So I've got a blog post on that. I could do a podcast episode on that. And then, I mean, I've got this friend of mine called Dan Knowlton, who's a marketing expert. He explains it so well. He says you should have like 3 types of content. So the first is sort of general content, which is awareness content. So the things we were talking about, like how do I create a content plan? How far should I plan ahead? Should I post on social media platforms every day, whatever it might be? Then he talks about having it's kind of like the second type of content is consideration content, when you're thinking, well, you know, should I buy it? 6 reasons I should, 6 reasons I shouldn't. Should I buy this one or this one? And then purchase content, which is basically when, I mean, I've just been running this week, I've been running a Christmas market for my members, an online Christmas market, and I've been getting them to sell their products and services on a Facebook Live every day. That's like purchase content. So that's kind of you sort of selling stuff. So I think we could all, I don't know about you, whether you could do this, Pete, but we could write down a list of 12 to 15 questions that our customers and clients ask us every day. Do you feel you could do that?
Very easily. And you know what? I've obviously being having the podcast and having the having a Facebook community that goes with it. If I'm ever stuck for anything, I'm only one post away from getting some inspiration. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're just listening to what people are asking you, it should be so easy. So, but basically, the next step, quarterly plan, is just write down a list of 12 to 15 questions you get asked that could make, you know, podcast episodes, blog posts, whatever it is that you do.
You can even apply what you do in your sort of work type meeting. So for example, I always get asked a lot about how Google indexes your website, which, okay, you know, I seem to say the same 5 or 6 sentences dozens of times a week, over and over and over again. And actually, there you go, there's a podcast episode or a blog or an infographic or whatever it is you want to use it, just out of something that's, I'm not even thinking about content planning, I just know what people are asking me regularly.
Exactly, yeah. And I think the next step for that is, I realized a few years ago that what I was doing, I was creating loads of awareness content. So I was just very general stuff like that, you know, how a page is indexed in Google or whatever. But I realized I wasn't creating enough of this consideration content, when you're actually specifically talking about your product or service. So, you know, why is it so expensive to hire a marketing agency, or how much does it cost to, you know, that sort of thing, consideration content, or purchase content. So I was actually doing lots of nice, free, helpful content, but I wasn't doing the kind of selly bit, which you do actually need to do in order to help your customers make a decision. So the next step for me is then tying it to, is having your list of 15, you know, ideas that you've got, but then tying it to your launches. So in your case, if you've got a potential podcast episode about how pages are indexed in Google, well, do you have a course that you're going to be selling that, you know, so it would make sense for you to do that on the 4th week of January or something like that. So then you could sell into your course. So that's the part I think that is the kind of, that makes the difference to your bottom line on your business. If you're kind of really strategically thinking, okay, I've got these 12 to 15 ideas, how can I tie them into my, you know, what I'm going to be selling? You know, again, if you're doing this on behalf of clients, how can you tie it into their launches so that you've got a clear call to action, or you can create a clear call to action that actually leads to a sale, which is obviously what we're all hoping for. So that's how I would, so that would be how I do your quarterly. And again, I think in my video tutorials, this bit's only about 20 minutes. This is about 20 minutes. So I reckon you could do that. I reckon you could do it in 5 or 10 minutes, probably. Again, just plot out a series of a blog post a week or a podcast episode. And that leads to another good point, actually. I mean, I've learned this the hard way as well, but I think we all try to create too much content, or when we come unstuck with our content planning, it's often because we're trying to do too much. So I'd really suggest that you aim to create one piece of content a week. So one blog post, one podcast, one YouTube video, whatever your key, you know, cornerstone type of content is, and then repurpose that. So for example, this podcast episode we're recording now, we could have recorded it as a video, and then you could have stripped out the audio and turned that into a podcast, and then you could get it transcribed and turned it into a blog, and then you can take some of the killer quotes that hopefully I'm going to give you, and you can turn those into cards that you can post on social media. And for my podcast, I create little mini trailers, so I take out, you know, some of the killer quotes and you turn them into audio trailers. You can do video trailers, you can create a little video trailer of you talking about your podcast. So I think the key thing is not to keep reinventing the wheel, but actually just think, how can I take one piece of content and make that last. You know, it's a bit like when you're a kid and you've got a lolly ice, how can you make your lolly ice? But, which is a good point, actually. This is very tangential, but I was born in Liverpool, where we say lolly ice rather than ice lolly. Where do you stand on the lolly ice?
It's an ice lolly, I'm afraid. I'm from the northeast, and it's an ice lolly. What do you call a bread bun?
Is that like a balm cake? Would I call it a balm cake?
Yeah, you'd call it a bar. Where I came from, they call them baps. In Sheffield, they call them bread cakes. I mean, there's no cake about it. It's a bread cake.
It is funny. And I think balm cake is, because I think I'm sort of Merseyside, but balm cake's kind of, I think it's Lancashire, but I think they say that in Liverpool anyway. I don't know why. Ice lolly. I've never heard a lolly ice. I've only ever heard Scousers say lolly ice.
Yeah, no, I must admit, I've never heard of a lolly ice before. It's always an ice lolly where I come from.
But anyway, that is very tangential. I can't even say it now. It's going off on a tangent, but it's that thing about making things last. Like when we were kids, my mum and dad used to give us a finger of fudge and we used to make it last as long as we could. And it's that kind of thing with your content. So can you, all your ice lolly, can you make it, you know, go as far as it possibly can, like we did in the old days? So that could lead you into your weekly content, because mm-hmm. if you've got one piece of content, one blog post, one podcast, one YouTube video, and you've turned that into, I've got a little proforma I've created to show how you can turn it into at least 12 pieces, then you've got your weekly content, because you could just spread that across the week, and you mm-hmm. can post your trailer on one day, and you could do your lovely quote cards the other day. And I tend to repurpose and recycle, so I might take the same post that I've put on Facebook and then repurpose that over on LinkedIn or over on Instagram, just tweak it slightly for the audience. And so it's about kind of making your content go further. And then that leads really nicely into your daily planning, because if you've created this one key cornerstone piece of content every week for each quarter, then you've got enough bits and pieces to populate your diary every day, really. So does that kind of make sense in terms of breaking it down?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, you can't really get much more straightforward than that. And I think starting in quarters is a good place, because, you know, I understand that you need to have a vision for the entire year, but trying to plan 52 weeks worth of stuff in one go is just ridiculous.
No, I mean, I couldn't manage that. And I always say, like, it's probably better to do your first 90 days and just put a date in the diary to come back, you know, in January and do the next quarter rather than try and do it all at once. It's just soul destroying, I think, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the problem. And I've shared this on this podcast before. You know, the reason this podcast started was because I tried to start a blog, and then sort of I tried to start a blog, and in order to get it going, I decided to do the 12 blogs of Christmas, and I got to number 8, and that's still the last one that's live on the website.
I love that.
You know, I'd forgotten that I didn't like blogging, and that's where, so naturally I spend a lot of time talking to people through my job and through explaining what we're doing, and it talking is a more natural medium for me, whereas I guess with you coming from a journalism background, it's actually writing the stuff out, it's typing. So but in order for me to start generating regular content, I needed to enjoy doing it, and mm-hmm. actually writing the words down for me wasn't it. But once I've generated the audio, you're dead right, I can then repurpose it, I can get it transcribed, I can do this, that and the other. I'm working on the video. I am working on the video. In my mind, I've got a face for radio, which is is an internal hurdle that I need to get across.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't like video particularly. I'm much more comfortable with the written word. And I'm a podcaster, but I just, it's something I do. Like, you know, some people really identify with being podcasters. I just do it, and I find it's easy and straightforward, and it's quicker to record a podcast, I think, than to write something, but I still like writing. But like you say, you can always get, I produce so much content, like written content, that I'm getting to the stage where if I was going to turn my podcast episodes into blog posts, I think I would actually have to get someone else to do that for me. But you can do that. If you've got a transcript, you could outsource that. You don't have to do it yourself. I think you're so right about finding the medium that feels right to you. Like, I do video and I do Facebook Lives. I've done a whole week of like a Facebook Live show. And actually, after a whole week of it, I think, actually, it's not too bad. It's like, I'm not too bad at it. But it's not my favourite medium. I'd always much rather be writing or just doing audio. And I was talking to a client of mine the other day, actually, who, she's a fitness instructor, and was starting to create these YouTube videos. And I know her quite well because I've been working with her for a while. And I was like, do you know what? I think you should do these on Facebook Live. And she's like, why? So, because I just know you're going to overthink it, and you'll overthink it, and you won't end up actually putting any of these videos out. So I think it's also about about choosing the platform where you feel you can be most successful, and sometimes live video, because you can't be perfect on live video. You know, you just have to kind of hit record and go with it, that actually that can be better for people. Some people are really good at live video, but I mean, I think I'm much better at live video than I am at pre-recorded stuff, and I'm just awful. I'm like oh God, you know. But I think it is about finding the, you know, and I feel much happier on live video as well. So I think it is about finding that medium that you like, because if you're going to show up and do it every week, you've got to enjoy it, haven't you?
You do indeed. And I'm trying to stretch myself a little bit with the live video. Actually, the day we're recording this is the day that WordPress Gutenberg is coming out, which if you're not a web developer, you probably won't know, you know, I'll be too bothered about that. But actually, it, in theory, it has the potential to break a lot of WordPress websites. So this morning, I have done two live videos in our group, looking at two different things that people need to look at in order to I don't really mean protect themselves from it, but update their versions of WordPress in the best way that they can do. And I purposefully did that as a live. I could have done a screen, sort of screencast type thing, but actually, no, I was sitting here and I was thinking, I'm going to have to do this live. Just, you know, put myself out there, just get it done. And it wasn't bad. I'm still living and breathing at the other end of it, you know. Yeah. I'm going to tell the tale, so...
Yeah, well, as I said, I've been doing a Christmas market as we're recording this for my clients. And so every day, this has been actually quite challenging for me, because I've done tons of Facebook Live, but I've never brought lots of other people onto a broadcast at the same time. Mm. And so I've brought six people at a time onto a Facebook Live. So I've been using Ecamm Live to do it. And obviously, you can imagine all the things that can go wrong. You're bringing, you know, six people onto a live within the space of an hour. So many things can go wrong. But for my clients, it's been brilliant, because they were nervous about doing live streaming as a great way for them to sell their products and services, but actually just kind of coming on a safe space, because they knew I was going to be asking them questions and I was going to be sort of interviewing them and prompting them. And like, they're all like, oh, I'm going to go and do this now. But I think the thing that I'm hoping to model to them actually is about the, you know, when you're calling people live from Skype, from a live broadcast, you know, and you can't get through to them, or for whatever reason, or it's not connecting, you know, you just got to talk through that, and you just kind of got to go with it. And I think that's the thing with life. You've just got to kind of dive in and get on with it. And I think lose your perfectionism. But I think it can be really good for you to do that, because I think it really helps across all of your content, actually, if you're just like, you know, just get it out there. And I know with video that Amy Schmittau, you know, she was actually due to be at UPNL, wasn't she? We were there the other week, and fortunately she couldn't come along, but she always talks about your first, you know, five videos will be terrible, you know. And my first podcast, when I go back to my first podcast episodes, oh my God, I just did 300 and I'm at 320 episodes now. And I when I got to 300, I actually pulled out the first bit of my first ever podcast episode, and it was awful. Like, I just sound awful. I sound like, you know, like I'm trying too hard. I just sound like an idiot. But if I hadn't made those first podcasts, I wouldn't be 300 nods down the line. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
I'm shuddering for you. I'm 30, nearly 40 episodes in. By the time we're recording this, I'm about 40 episodes in. And I've gone back and listened to about 5 seconds of some of my first podcasts and thought, no, that's enough. That's enough. Why did I ever release that into the world? Nobody needs to hear that anymore.
Yeah, well, you can imagine 300 episodes ago, I've moved on a lot since then. Oh my God. And I actually broadcasted it in the podcast episode so people could hear it. So it was extra cringy, because I've had to listen to it quite a few times.
you're a braver lady than I'm ever going to be. That's for sure. So that though does bring us on to sort of the next kind of question, really, which is, so, you know, you've planned all this content, you kind of know what's coming up, you've got the titles for it, or potential titles, all that kind of stuff, but you actually need to create this stuff to make it engaging, don't you? Yeah. So are there any sort of key tips to sort of help engagement with episodes? I'm talking in podcast speak again, but yeah. With content, have you got any sort of quick fire tips that we could?
Oh yes, I've got tips for you. I've got like four different types of content that I just work every time, so I can quickly talk you through them. So yep. The first type of content that I think works every time is, and I call it, I need to know this content. So this is basically like what we're doing now, podcast content, where you're sharing like practical tips that people can go and, you know, put into practice. The problem with I need to know this content, although it's really valuable. So for example, I put out a podcast episode recently, like how to generate passive income in your business, which is like, you know, the kind of topic that everybody wants to learn about. Mm. But if I just post that on my Facebook page, or I just put it on Instagram, or put it on Twitter, then everyone's just going to be like, yeah, whatever. So what I do is I ask a question first. So I might go into my, I've got a big Facebook group that's got 12,500 members. So I might go in there and say, are you interested in generating passive income in your business? Like A, yes, I am. B, haven't thought about it. C, not at all, or whatever it might be. And then you make it really easy for people to respond. And then those people who say, yes, I'm interested, then you give them a link to the podcast. So you're actually putting that content in the hands of people who actually want it. And there's lots of different ways you can do. You can sort of put a controversial statement about passive income, like passive income doesn't exist, agree, disagree. But the easier you can make it for people to kind of get interested in the topic and to engage with you on it. And then you can go, oh, and by the way, I've got this bad podcast episode. And we do it on Instagram stories, actually. Whenever I put a new podcast episode out, instead of just saying, hey, here's my new podcast episode, we'll ask a question. So for example, it just so happens this week, my podcast episode was about how to create a content plan for 2019. So we'd ask the question on an Instagram story, like, have you created your, we do a poll, have you created your content plan? Yes or no. And then, you know, you're sort of getting people involved and they're already interested in the subject. So that's the first type. I need to know this content, which is practical, you know, solving a problem, you're making somebody's day easier. And so you're podcast content minds like that. So the second type is that I often talk about is I need to know this. I know about that content. So this is when you make it so easy for people to engage that they just can't resist getting involved. So to give you an example, I spoke at the Youpreneur Summit last year, and I wanted to tell people that I was speaking at the Youpreneur Summit because I want to do more international speaking. But I thought, what if I just go on social media and say, hey everyone, I'm speaking at the Youpreneur Summit, everyone will be like, yeah, right, whatever. So instead, I had a very real problem around this event. I'd bought two dresses and I couldn't decide which one to wear. I couldn't decide whether to wear the blue one or the pink one. And you might remember at Youpreneur Summit, because Chris Ducker actually showed this picture this year. And so I basically took a picture of myself in both dresses. Over the course of a few weeks, I posted it on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. It just got hundreds of comments, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views. And Chris mentioned it in his talk. I talked about it as speaking at an event in Nashville a couple of months ago. I talked about it there. People still bring it up all the time. And it's when you make it so easy. I mean, you don't need any special qualifications to say pink or blue, do you? You don't need to. You're not going to make a fool of yourself responding. It's just, you know, all you have to do is type pink, blue, or whatever. So it's that type of content we give people a straight choice. So with my media diary, for example, we instead of saying, hey, you know, my media diary is going to be on pre-order next week, we post a picture of the four cover designs, say which cover design do you like the best, and get people to vote, that kind of thing. So then we've got I this is what I think. So this is when you give a strong opinion on something. I do this on LinkedIn quite frequently, where I might go on and say something which I've got a strong opinion about something. So, for example, I had a blog post which was about how to get high-profile speaking gigs. And so there was one line in that blog post where I said, if you can't afford to buy a ticket for an event, then you don't deserve to be on that stage. Now, that sounds out of context. It sounds like a very controversial thing to say in amongst a very helpful blog post. But it got people going. So I basically said, you know, if you can't afford to buy a ticket for Youpreneur, for example, then you're not ready. That was the phrase I used. You're not ready to be on that stage as a speaker. Agree or disagree. So really strong viewpoint like that. You know, it's going to get people going. They're going to get talking on the topic that you want to be talking about. And then the last type of content is this. I know how that feels. So that's when you share something that's happened to you, or, you know, that we could do this for a client and it's happened to them, that other people, it might not happen to them, but they can empathize with it. So just to give you an example, one of my clients, Jennifer Hanley, she's a handbag and accessory designer, and she's got these high-end handbags that she sells. They're about 500 quid a go. But underneath it all, she had a deep, dark secret, and it was this, is that she was homeless. So she was running this kind of high-end handbag company, but she had been traveling, she'd been working abroad, and she didn't actually have anywhere to live. So she was sofa surfing, she was staying with friends, she was house sitting. The day that she chose to go and share that story on her Facebook page, she got hundreds and hundreds of comments, more than she'd ever got on any piece of content she'd ever created.
Wow.
And you might think to yourself, well, didn't people think, oh, I'm not buying a designer handbag from her because she's homeless? No, you know, actually her sales have gone through the roof. So four types of content that are guaranteed. So the first one was like, this, I need to know this. Second one is, I know about that. Third one is, this is what I think. And the fourth one is, I know how that feels. And guaranteed to get engagement every time. But that's the thing, is that it's not enough to just create the content. you've got to be thinking, you know, getting clever and thinking about, oh, when I put this blog post out, this podcast episode out, what am I going to do to get people to actually go and click the link?
It is about that lateral thinking. And actually most of this stuff, it's habitual, isn't it? It, you know, the first, a bit like you were saying with your podcast recording, you know, the first few times they're a bit cringeworthy, they're a bit, oh yeah, okay. But actually you start to think in that way. You start to, as we're putting a podcast episode together, you know, you start to think, sort of things happen that you start to think, yeah, well, I could do that as a, you know, as part of the launch of this show, or I could do this, or I could do that, I could do the other. And all of a sudden, when you start thinking that way, it becomes a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah, and there's a question that I ask myself all the time whenever I'm putting any content out, and it's this, it's how can I make it about them? So how can I make this about my audience? So this might be about me, it might be about my podcast episode, it might be about the thing I'm speaking at or whatever, but how can I make it about my audience? So I was speaking out in Boston a couple of months ago at some... Inbound. And I wanted to say, oh, I'm speaking inbound because obviously the more I can share that, the more other event organisers might book me to speak at my spaces. And I thought, again, if I post it, nobody will take any notice. So I basically said to my audience, look, I've got to create this talk anyway. Would you be interested in me showing you behind the scenes and showing you how I create a talk? So I ended up creating this little vlog of me, and I went off to a cafe and I showed people a storyboard, my talks before I do them and everything. I got so much more engagement than I would have got because I made it about the audience. Like, this is for you. This is to show you how to put a talk together. This is, you know, then people were asking me questions about how you get booked to speak at places like that and whatever. And so that's the question I always say, even though it is about me, how can I make it about them? Because I can still get what I need out of this, but when I make it about them, you know, we're selfish. We like telling our own stories. We like talking about ourselves, don't we? So if you can make it about them, then you're going to get so much more back.
Well, and let's face it, you were going to have to do that work anyway. So actually, you've created some valuable content without actually having to do too much extra work than you were going to have to do in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, that's great. I had Amy Woods on the show a few weeks ago. And she was basically gave the same analogy. She'd spent three solid days working on this presentation. But she then managed to make something ridiculous like 16 additional pieces of content out of it, you know, over the next coming months. And those additional pieces of content only took such a little amount of effort because she'd already put in this big bulk of work. So
yeah, she spoke at my event a few weeks ago, and she repurposed her talk into a magazine, into a comic, and gave it out, which is, that's brilliant, isn't it?
Like, there you go. Yeah. Amy's brilliant at things like that, though. But it is, you know, people think, oh yeah, I never would have come up with that. Well, actually, firstly, you don't have to, because, you know, Amy did that because that fits in with her character and her business and her model. So you don't have to emulate Amy. But then on the same note, she only thinks that way because she's had lots of practice, she's had lots of time, and now those creative juices just sort of flow in that way, and that's the result that comes out the other end. So
yeah, and I think it's like a muscle that you have to train. So like, you know, I know the pink dress and blue dress thing, and I've said this when I've been talking about it, I know it's not for everyone. I know some people, but God, I'd rather cut off my own head than share something like that. But it's about seeing what the strategy is, and the strategy is like making it about the audience. The strategy is kind of making it personal. When you give people a bit of an insight into your life, like, people, they enjoy it, you know, it's behind the scenes. But it's just about finding how you can use that strategy, but in a way that works for you and feels comfortable for your personality. I know that wouldn't work for everybody, but I feel pretty convinced that everybody can find their own version of that pink and blue dress. You know what I mean?
I'm not going to put up a picture of me in a pink and a blue dress. Safe to say that wouldn't work well on the speed dating site. Janet, thank you so much. I won't keep you any longer because we've gone on a bit longer than I thought. And full disclosure, you were talking about having that having those six people on that Facebook Live, and it did take us about four goes to get this podcast.
It did,
going.
Yeah. It actually took us longer to get on here than it did my Facebook Live. But that's technology for you, isn't it? That's how it works.
It is. So thank you so much for your perseverance in getting going. That was absolutely brilliant. If people wanted to reach out to you, where's the best place that they can find you?
The best place is my website, so it's janetmurray.co.uk, but I'm pretty active on social media, so Instagram janmurrayuk, Twitter jan_murray, and my Facebook page is janetmurrayuk.
Fantastic. I'll drop a few links in the show notes, but at the bottom of, if there'll definitely be a link to your website at the bottom of your website in the footer, there's links to all of your social profiles, so people can get hold of you easy enough. Thank you again so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
There were some awesome takeaways in that episode. Thank you, Janet. We'd love to know how you get on with your content plan. So please come and join us in the Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group. It will send you straight on over, or just search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast. Until next week, we'll see you again soon.